Opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
It ain't the destination. No, it's about the journey. It ain't where you're headed, but it's how you grow. It ain't about the trophies, but getting back on your feet, walking in your glory. So come on, let's go.
Good afternoon, 860 AM listeners, all those that are tuning in via Facebook and through WWDB Radio. We're so excited to be here today. I am your guest host, Angela Brown, doing my best to fill in for the infamous Michelle Lawrence, whom I love so much and is on the road and will be tuning in soon. We are going to be talking to you about one of the four W's today, and that is wellness, one of my favorite of the four topics. And we have a phenomenal conversation in store with you, as today's goal really is for us to acknowledge that caring hurts. Yes, caring hurts. We're going to talk about the fact that caring for other people, just maintaining that sensitivity, that passion. Sometimes we disconnect when we experience hurt and we don't even allow ourselves to feel. We don't want to do that. We want to care. We want to be present. And sometimes that might open the door for us experiencing pain, experiencing hurt. So yes, we're going to acknowledge today that sometimes caring hurts, but we don't have to stay in that place. We can actually move beyond our pain, move beyond our hurt, allow it to propel us actually into purpose. And so I'm really, really excited to talk about how the three of us that are here today have journeyed through that process, share how we have learned to do that, but also how we are learning to do that. It's an ongoing process. And also talk about some of the other women that we've encountered along the way who have turned their pain into power, first acknowledging that pain so that they could triumph over trauma, and then perhaps even sparking a movement, propelling them into service of other people to help lift them out of their pain. And so we're going to really talk about that in detail, and we also are going to talk about the importance of maintaining a healthy heart, a healthy soul. The heart, we often talk at the Perfecting Church, where I call home, that the heart or the soul is where we house our memories, right? Our emotions, our will, all of those are packaged together in the heart. And so we are going to also highlight the importance, some tools that we can use in order to maintain a healthy heart, to ensure that we're not suppressing, right? Masking our pain, or we're not passing it on to other people, that we're living from a healthy place that begins in the heart so that we can actually help others and get healed ourselves, whether we are experiencing trauma firsthand or we are the byproducts, if you will, of that trauma and are experiencing secondary trauma. And so we're going to talk about that in detail, along with some dynamic women sitting to my right, and that is Desiree Guyton, a counselor who is returning with me today, as well as Donna Baines. And so before we get into that conversation, we want to just lay a framework for the conversation. And beginning in Proverbs 4:23, one of my favorite passages, I think it's a really important passage. I'm reading from the NLT version. It actually says, guard your heart. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of life. There is a King James version that says, keep your heart with all diligence. And so I don't want us to misinterpret the word guard as in protect or shelter or defend, ensure no one gets in. I want us to see this as it was designed to be seen. Keep it. Maintain watch over it, realizing how important it is for us to have a healthy heart, a healthy soul, because the Bible goes on to say that it can determine the course of your life. It can dictate the quality of your life. And so we want to maintain healthy hearts, but it's absolutely true there are scriptures that say plainly, such as that in Psalm 34, verse 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous. We're going to experience afflictions. We're going to experience hurt. We're going to experience pain. There's a passage that's also one of my other favorite passages in Luke 4, verse 18. Jesus himself is declaring that the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. I'm anointed to heal the brokenhearted. He's acknowledging that's the very reason why I came. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me and has sent me to heal the brokenhearted. What is all of that saying? We're going to be brokenhearted. We're going to experience affliction. Yes, that's a reality. And so we don't have to be defined by the affliction. We don't have to be defined by the pain and the hurt that we're experiencing, but we should not be immune to the reality that every single person on this planet is going to experience some form of pain, affliction. Our responsibility is to guard our heart, to keep our heart. Yes, we might not be able to control all of the external conditions. We can't keep things from happening to us or to those that we love, but we absolutely can dictate the course of our lives by how we respond. Keeping our heart with all diligence, keeping our heart, guarding over, watching over our heart, the state of our heart, the climate of our heart, to ensure that it remains healthy, not tainted by the bitterness, the afflictions that absolutely we're going to face in this life, but overcoming those painful experiences so that we can live life on purpose and make a difference in the lives of other people while doing so. And so we're getting ready to get in. Are you excited, Donna, Desiree? Y'all ready to jump on in this conversation? We're going to do that. But first, we want to hear from Yolanda Adams, who's going to sing us into this conversation. Open up my heart. Guide me until I am sure I've opened up my heart. Talk to me. And so we're going to get into what that looks like for us to live that out, inviting in conversations with God himself to talk to us so that we could keep our heart with all diligence. But before we talk about that, we're going to talk with Michelle Lawrence. Talk to me, Michelle Lawrence.
Hey, Angela Brown.
Hey.
I'm so glad to have you hosting today's show, and very excited about today's theme and actually how it fits into this journey I'm on with running for Congress. This is my last segment of On the Road with Michelle before Election Day, and I am addressing heart issues. Heart issues that stem from folks also being hurt by the vote, the voices that have been speaking for them, hurt that they have made some selections of elected officials that have not produced what they said they would. And in this hurt, there has become hopelessness. Like, I don't want to vote. I don't need to vote. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if I vote. And I need all listeners to understand it does. Don't let your frustration keep you out of the booth. Don't let the fact that a decision was made before and someone did not execute keep you from moving forward and putting the right people in place. Most folks are saying, I'm going to wait for the presidential election. Understand there are far more important elections that are happening that impact you locally before you can get to the presidential race. And this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're expecting a low turnout. And I'm telling the listeners, you need to reclaim your voice
yes.
through your vote.
Agreed.
Very critical.
Yes. I hope everybody is tuning in and paying attention. What that message was is that hurt tries to cause hopelessness. Mm-hmm. Tries to cause hopelessness, but thankfully that is what propelled Michelle on this journey to run for office, to reverse the course of that hopelessness, restoring hope, but she can't do it alone. She needs your voice, your vote, your voice, but also your life. You need to know your life makes a difference. Your voice, your vote, your life makes a difference. And so don't sit in that hopelessness feeling that your life, your voice, your vote does not matter. You matter. Your voice matters. Your purpose matters. And so I pray that you exercise your right to vote. But equally important, you step up in fullness of who you are and you exercise your authority as a person on this planet designed on purpose, and you walk up rightly in that purpose and fulfill it. Thank you so much, Michelle Lawrence, for calling
yes,
in.
Two more things I
Absolutely.
Wanted to add, Angela. So the first thing is I'm running so that all women understand that glass ceilings can be and will be shattered. They don't have to exist. There is a power within you that says that I can and I will, and he that is within us is greater than he that is in the world. And so that's also why I'm running. The second piece is I'm running because it is time to restore our communities. It is time to reclaim our villages, and it is it's time to rebuild our corridors. We will fund our schools. We will provide hope for our children and continue to build legacies. That can't be done if you sit at home. My number is 8. 8 stands for new beginning. It is a new beginning for a new district, for new leadership. May 15th, vote for Michelle Lawrence as your first African-American congresswoman. Now, I'm going to get back on the road. But thank you so much, Angela, and to all of the guests that are there. God bless.
Same to you. Thank you so much for having us, giving me the opportunity to sit in your seat. But I'm looking forward to the new seat and the new beginnings that are underway for you. We need people just like you to represent us, and I know you're going to represent us well. God bless you. And I think that that was a powerful introduction. It's time to restore. It's time for some new beginnings. I think it's time for us to write new stories for ourselves. Some of us have been stuck, right? Yeah. Living the same old stories, reading the same old chapters, but it's time to turn the page and for us to experience some new beginnings. And so, as shared earlier, I'm really excited about having these two amazing women in the studio with me, Desiree Guyton, as well as Donna Baines. Desiree is a licensed counselor. She's the executive director of Quest Movement and also a master trainer for Trauma Healing Institute. I know that I have personally witnessed her passion for this topic firsthand. She's a dynamic speaker. She's also a minister, and we've personally experienced her training at our church home, where she's actually led training for other people to learn how to first acknowledge their pain, but move beyond that and become skillful at facilitating others and doing the same. And so we're really, really incredibly excited to have you here today to break this down a little bit. But I'm also really excited to hear your personal story. I'm sure there's a backstory, right? We all have those waters that we've been drawn out of. And so I'm really interested to hear how you started this journey that now has you passionately helping other people out of their pain. And then also Donna Baines, family, friend, but also just a powerful woman. She is a wife. She is a mother. She is the founder of Baines College Consulting. I know she really, really desires to make a difference. I know she's an entrepreneur, entrepreneurial thinker, is always coming up with all kinds of creative ideas and strategies, not just for her own benefit, but to benefit other people. But again, we all have those backstories. We've all been drawn out of not just waters, not pure waters, right? Sometimes muddy waters. She's going to tell us a little bit about her backstory, and in many cases, one that she continues to live out with her beautiful family, including three daughters, one of which she's going to talk about today in detail. Miss Phoenix, as she journeys through her story and really a campaign called Phoenix Rising. So welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Welcome so much. I mean, welcome to you, and thank you so much for being here. Desiree, I'm going to start with you. I would love to hear from you about what propelled you on this journey.
Well, what first started was I'm a preacher's kid, and my father fell in ministry, and it destroyed my family with a divorce, with my brother's death. I watched my brother die of cancer, suffer from it, and die all within a two-year period with my own physical injury that was devastating at the time as a teenager. And that led me to, now I know, depression. And I didn't realize that. But then because of Christ and his saving grace, he just pulled me out of that, but I had mentors, I had people. And so with on my journey, we fast forward, was I became a full-time youth pastor, a youth director for a very large church. And in ministry, I'm having these families coming in, and this was, it was just constantly overwhelmed with. Now I could look back and see I had kids who were bipolar. I had kids who were suffering with schizophrenia.
Wow.
You know, I didn't have that language, though. And then having these families struggle with dealing with kids who were, and then trauma. We've had these kids that were dealing with multiple types of trauma, anxieties, and just it was overwhelming. And I remember walking alongside of a young man who really, and it was blowing up our youth ministry, too, because you have these kids that are in this ministry and you don't know how to handle it. And I didn't have any tools. So while I was in my Master of Divinity program, I took a counseling course, and I said, this is the answer. And that was part of the program. I was like, you could teach me. All this Bible is great, but this helping people to be able to deal with their hurts and pain. And then I was on my own journey of figuring, realizing that's what God was doing. He was combining what I went through as a teenager and how the Lord used different people, used the church, and used, and Christ intervened and interrupted Satan's plan to destroy me at that time, because I was in a destructive path. And then equipping me to say, hey, I can help the church to see we could preach a lot of things, but if we don't give people the tools to help people see Christ in the midst of all that they're going through, that's what started me on this journey of counseling and then being involved in people's
homes. I'm grateful you're on that journey. And not only giving people tools, I think giving people permission. Giving people permission, like the foundational scriptures that we read earlier to frame this conversation. How could we not believe that if Christ himself is declaring he came for the brokenhearted, that people would not be brokenhearted? You know, scripture says that while we were yet sinners, right, Christ died for us. He found us in a state that was not pretty and lifted us out of that and works to continue to lift us out of that. But I think we need to give ourselves permission to acknowledge the state. So often we want to move past that. We want to we want to mask that. And I think that people sometimes come to places of shelter, not limited to the church, but certainly including the church, and find shame instead. And so I think so much of our shared journey, we were talking about this last week, is about giving ourselves and other people permission to acknowledge your pain. Likely it's seeping out of your pores anyway, right? And so, Donna, talk a little bit about that, because you talked about some of the language that was once foreign to you, Desiree, but I'm sure now it increasingly is part of your dialogue with many other people. I know that I had no understanding of bipolar. I had no understanding of depression, anxiety, until I personally experienced it in my family. Not just caring for other people who are battling it, then starting to experience it myself as a product of caring for someone. And Donna, I think that you have a similar story.
Yeah, so my family, I feel like you were speaking of my family. You can go through the list of schizophrenia, bipolar, ADHD, alcoholism. Mental health is just prevalent in my family. And I grew up constantly fighting the battles with the people I love the most because of their instability and inability to get the help that you talk about. And my own denial that I might carry some of that, despite being told that, you know, you have some disorders. I was never medicated. And it wasn't until I experienced trauma in adulthood that those things I had been denying and fighting and holding back because I was so busy caring for others, that those things really manifested and came out, and it was like a beast that had just been waiting and sleeping. So
And I think that is why it's so important for us to give ourselves permission, talking about maintaining, keeping our heart, because likely it's there under the surface, and you just don't know until it's triggered, right?
Yeah.
Until we have some experiences, and the three of us, I like to think I look like I'm 28. I don't know, in my head, maybe.
You look great.
But I'm middle-aged. And research demonstrates that people like myself, people like perhaps you, are smack in the middle of caring for an aging parent, caring simultaneously, like you, Donna, for children. And it positions us for traumatic experience. Not only are we burdened with the pain of other people that we're caring for sometimes, but that opens the door for us to personally experience the pain. And if we don't keep our heart, like you just said, it's like a beast right under the surface, ready to break out anytime. So Desiree, talk a little bit about how prevalent this is for women like us that are in the process of caring for loved ones and don't necessarily have the benefit of turning our attention to ourselves, but that opens up the door to secondary trauma.
Well, as most of us know, our parents are living longer, so we are caught in between. I know I'm a grandmother, and so I have grandkids, and then I'm also care for an older mother. So statistically, we know that most women are caring for not only their parents, but most likely their spouse's parents or other other people. And then because we're natural nurturers and caregivers. So what happens is that begins to, we begin to care for too many people. So statistics have shown that caregivers care for too many people. And then they become the object of those caregivers' anger and carrying the burden of those care, the people that we carry, that, you know. And so then also they often may start to begin to feel manipulated because you're carrying so many different people's burdens and stress. Then it's hard to navigate because then you're overwhelmed. So statistics and what we understand is that you're starting to feel fully overwhelmed with not only your life and then the care, then the cares of others. Then you start to struggle with some people, depending on how they're wired, they like giving so much that they become the center of that giving. And so in doing that, what happens is we begin to develop cognitive distortions. Okay, and so those distortions is how we see the world, like you shoulds or the must. No, nothing's black or white. There's no gray. And so these are what we call distortions. And so you start to develop and start to lean to one side of these distortions of pattern of thinking. So then that the pattern of thinking develops certain feelings. Okay, so then you feel no one cares. I'm the, you know, no one's helping me. No one cares for me. No one. And so those thoughts determines our feelings. And then all of a sudden you have all these massive behaviors. And so the behaviors are you start to isolate yourself. You start to not care for yourself. You start to become chronically fatigued, mm-hmm. chronically tired. Mm-hmm. You have these intrusive thoughts, not being able to rest.
Mm-hmm.
So you're constantly no peace, so not resting. So then you have all these thoughts. Why isn't my family calling? Why isn't
right.
this? So you have all these overwhelming right. thoughts. So then there's poor concentration, and then you become emotionally exhaustive. And then where hopelessness starts really starts with fear, because then you have a whole lot of fear that starts to develop.
Right.
And so then physical illness, so we know that starts to attack caregivers.
And then I think it also its aim is to corrupt our purpose.
Exactly.
Because I think that what you said was so powerful, and I've never even heard of that terminology before, yeah. cognitive distortions.
Yeah.
But I had a conversation recently with someone who said, I'm always taking care of other people, and I'm entering into a season where I feel like I'm not supposed to do all of that, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Apart from painful experiences, helping other people, apart from that, I don't know who I am.
Exactly.
I find my identity. And to me, that's the root of dysfunctionalism, right? That's
mm-hmm.
how we get into those dysfunctional relationships
exactly. Absolutely.
Where we have imbalance, dependence, sometimes even caring for people so much so that we don't even know how to care for ourselves and completely have lost sight of our identity mm-hmm. and our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
So, yeah, hopelessness, fear, root causes of something brewing underneath mm-hmm. that ultimately is trying to alter the course of your life, dictate
absolutely.
Your purpose. And you can relate to that,
though. Oh, for sure.
Not in
for
a way.
Sure. I think in my trauma, it's like a primitive instinct took over, and I had that fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And isolation is just part of the protecting myself and anticipating danger for my family and just being ready for it. But then it becomes perverted, and you think everything is going to go wrong,
mm.
and you start to self-realize those things and fulfill self-prophesize
right,
those
right,
things
right.
into your own life.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, absolutely. It was very hard for me to admit or to recognize that I had these issues. In fact, I knew that my feelings weren't right and that I needed help.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until I did a postpartum screening that they said, okay, you're off.
Mm.
But I didn't feel differently after having the last baby than I had felt before.
Mm.
It's just somebody noticed. And how many times, though, do people actually say, I need help?
Well,
you know?
Right. Yeah, or give themselves permission to ask for help. I know, you know, primarily the reason why I think so many women find themselves in this experience is because we feel like we're supposed to be the help.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, God created
mm-hmm.
us to be help meets, right? And
yeah.
so we don't even feel that we're permitted to get help, to
yeah.
ask for help. And
yeah.
then we turn around and we're frustrated when nobody's helping. Nobody's
yeah.
helping, but we don't necessarily ask. And so this
or we don't
this
know
conversation
we're,
is really
you know,
important.
I
yeah.
think we talked about what most people don't realize
yeah.
because you did a screening. But if just because I'm angry, I justified my emotions.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, my rage is justified because no one's helping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
you don't know you're sick.
Right.
But when people are saying something, you know, it's your behaviors tell you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to
yeah,
say is
yeah.
when I'm not sleeping, when I'm not eating right, or if
yeah.
I'm overeating,
mm-hmm.
All those things are the signs
mm-hmm.
that says something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's the brokenness, but people don't understand that that's broken.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? Because
yeah,
you justify your behavior.
People get comfortable living in their
right.
brokenness because they don't know they're broken.
I was sharing with Angela that I actually visited the hospital twice
mm-hmm.
thinking I was having a heart attack
mm-hmm.
and,
mm-hmm.
or I was dying
mm-hmm.
because my anxiety wasn't necessarily in my head. It was just in my body like
yeah.
a
right.
surge of adrenaline that I had no answer for.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to react. I just knew that I was ready on edge to fight because I had been exposed for so long to life or death situations with my daughter Phoenix.
Mm.
Right.
And after so long, I can totally understand now how our veterans have PTSD when
right.
they go out in the battlefield
right.
and they have to be in that fight or flight mode.
Right.
It's part of our primitive nature to
mm-hmm.
like protect. So the same thing that can help us if we don't get correction can hurt us
right.
when we re-enter a normal, healthy right. environment, and that was my struggle.
Yeah, and then we don't really know what's happening to us.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have external people. I still had an external voice. It was within from the Holy Spirit, but it was external.
Mm-hmm.
I shared the last time I was here, certainly have shared with you ladies, that my personal journey that really sensitized me to this was having care for a family member who was battling depression. So foreign, out of the blue. I don't know what this is. And it was painful and it was lengthy. This wasn't an overnight one and done. It was a prolonged time frame that had all kinds of other issues connected to it. Weight loss. This person wasn't eating. This person wasn't sleeping. It was a painful experience. And then when they began to move out of it, thankfully, with a combination of help from counselors, prescriptions from doctors, as well as prayer and the word that I was able to at least contribute, I found myself.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself having the craziest thought of retreating to my closet, turning out the light, closing the door, and wanting to be invisible, just wanting to shut off, isolate from the world.
Yeah.
And I heard within that that's post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
Don't know what that is. And I feel embarrassed because what do you mean post-traumatic stress disorder? I thought that was something soldiers who go to war come back with.
Yeah.
But I was at war. I had been at war for years caring for a loved one, and it impacted me.
Mm-hmm.
You went through a similar journey. Let's unpack that a little bit for people that don't know your story, that don't know who Phoenix is, who is a dynamic young woman in and of herself.
Yeah, so you mentioned I have three children.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest, Mariah, is 14, and she's healthy, thank goodness. But my middle child, Phoenix, is now 4 years old.
Mm.
And she, this July, it will be 4 years post-transplant for bone marrow. Shortly after she was born, she was only 9 weeks old, she was diagnosed with a rare blood disorder. They go back and forth about whether or not it's a cancer. It's treated like cancer with chemo and a bone marrow transplant, but she started her treatment when she was only 2 months old.
Wow.
And it turned our world upside down.
Mm-hmm.
I was working a corporate job, and I was really feeling good about my life and my family. I'd gotten married, and this was that next step,
right.
Towards that white picket fence
right.
family. And when we were faced with her diagnosis and prognosis that she had a very slim chance of living, and that if she was going to live, we would have to overcome many battles. And that's what we've had to do. And I thank God today she is a survivor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She has been healed of her primary disease called HLH.
Mm-hmm.
So that's become my platform, if you will. That's become what I advocate for, awareness for rare diseases, awareness for bone marrow donation, and trying to help other people with an infant that is nonverbal, that needs treatment, and you are their caregiver. And, trying to fight for the right treatments and the right care for your child, it's a battle. You know, we all want the same thing. We all wanted her to survive. But knowing how to help somebody that can't speak for themselves.
Right.
So you just totally lose yourself in doing that, and that becomes your purpose. And so she went through 12 weeks of chemotherapy, and then when she was 5 months old, she did a 7-day intense course of chemo to wipe out her system, and was given donated cells from a very generous young lady in California named Melissa, who we owe so much to. Young college girl just decided to donate her bone marrow, and it gave Phoenix her second chance at life. And we believed at that point, she's on the road to recovery. That's it. But we didn't know that the recovery road was long and hard and bumpy, and that we would experience secondary complications from her treatments, such as graft versus host disease, which is something she's battled for the last few years now.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is just as life-threatening. So, but this little girl is just, she is so powerful. And she doesn't know that she went through all this.
Mm-hmm.
But we do, yeah. And we have the scars to prove it, mm-hmm. and the scars are inside, yeah. you know, inside our head and right. inside our heart. But it just reaches, I'm sure you know, with the yeah. cancer diagnosis, it's not just the patient, it's the entire family yeah. Yeah. that gets that diagnosis, because you have to change your entire life and your entire regimen and your way of thinking.
Right.
But I do want to share something somebody said when we were in the hospital with Phoenix that really flipped my faith upside down. Mm. And it was a family in the cancer ward where the man was in the hallway and he was looking out the window, and he was sharing with another man whose child was in the hospital that his son had passed. But he said it with so much joy and honor that for him was his son had honor in his death, because he was going back to where he came from and he was going to heaven to be with God. And I just had never seen it this way. Yeah. I looked at this entire journey like it was hell, you know, but the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth, because that's the day you go and return to be with your father. But that was so hard as a mother to wrap my mind around, because my job right. was to protect her.
That's the epitome of seeing beyond pain
yeah.
and having an eternal perspective. I think that is a byproduct of keeping your heart with yeah. all diligence, right?
Yes.
That's a byproduct of guarding your heart. When you have that type of perspective, right,
yeah.
that type of heart position, then you don't have to be defined by, limited by your pain.
Yeah.
But that's a painful reality
yeah.
to have a child that you love, that you gave birth to, battle a sickness, mm-hmm. and then in the scenario that you just named, ultimately mm-hmm. succumb to that sickness, but passing through
yeah.
right
and
into an eternal
his surrender to God, that he just
yeah.
you know. And I remember having that prayer at one point, that Lord, if it's your will that you want to take her, I will do my best to understand that, but I'm going to need you to help me, because I don't know how I'll get through that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so much power in that vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about, like, isolation. You know, like, the mental health stuff is stigmatized, but loneliness is stigmatized, too. People
yeah.
don't want to admit
right.
they are lonely.
Right.
And we documented and shared Phoenix's journey online, but we were absolutely on isolation for a good year.
Wow.
Where we couldn't have visitors. We
right.
had to have gloves and masks. Angela, you remember.
Right.
You visited
right.
it.
Right.
It was a very tough situation, and so not being able to unpack your feelings as a mom, being helpless and scared, and it all just builds. It just builds, and like that snowball inside of you, and it eventually comes out.
Yeah, a good friend of ours, her name is Marcia Meyer. She started this phenomenal work called 24-Hour Mind Battle, so people should definitely look into 24-Hour Mind Battle, and I would love for you to share information about how people can become passionate advocates against HLH and
yes.
become donors, as you educated me. But what she would often talk about in her battle against depression was how she would isolate, because she didn't want to infect or affect other people.
Right.
You know, I'm sad, I'm down, and mm-hmm. people know me to be happy, so mm-hmm. I feel like I have to bring that everywhere I go. And if I'm not in that place, then I'm going to bring, you know, sadness mm-hmm. and bring everybody down. And so you are lonely. You're
yeah.
alone. You're isolated. And it's such a lot. We talked
yeah.
about this also, how mm-hmm. you have so many conversations in your head
mm-hmm.
that disconnect you, that
mm-hmm.
aren't real. And
yeah.
then you get connected with other people and find, oh my gosh, you believe that too?
Mm-hmm.
You're feeling that way
yeah.
too?
When I was retreating, because I was experiencing guilt of her survivorship, and being in a support group with other moms and families that were losing their children to this same disease, and that my child had so many battles that she had to overcome, and every complication that you could possibly have, she had.
Wow.
And so I got to witness and I got to see the miracle, but I didn't have that joy that I could express and share it with everybody else. Like, I knew that I needed hope during that time, but it was hard for me to give hope to other people because they were losing their kids.
Right. Mm.
And that's where I got stuck, you know?
Yeah, and that's where that whole distortion, because, like you said, and Angela hinted too as well, is when we start to think that way, and everybody has different stories. That's why as a counselor we have to find out where they're thinking, because you assume, okay, your child's doing well, then you're feeling well.
Right.
You know, and that's an assumption, but then there's a distortion that you're starting to fall in, as well as the various people fall in.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's so critical when the Bible says renew our minds.
Yeah.
Because when we're talking about renewing our minds, you're refocusing to your imago Dei, you're refocusing to who God created you and what your purpose is. And like you said, that man reminded us that, first of all, this is a gift that was given to you by God. And, and then you begin to see that that gift is going back to God.
Yeah.
And even though it's hard, it's then repurposing in you and reshaping your mind and reshaping your way of thinking so you can see something differently.
Well, I had an awesome experience last night in our small group P-cell meeting. And, you know, I shared my hesitation to come and talk about my experiences. And, you know, one of the sisters in there, she was so intuitive. She said, "It sounds to me like you are afraid to share hope because you can't promise the outcome." And I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm afraid to share what my experience was because I can't promise that same miracle is going to happen. And she said, just remember, it's not your job to save that person.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's not your job.
It's just your job
to open your mouth and be the voice and provide that hope, because when you were in that position, you needed hope.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She's absolutely right. I put on my blinders to all negativity during that time, and all I wanted to see were survivor stories. That's all I wanted to see. And I needed that.
And for me, I found purpose in it. I was able to empathize. I am able to empathize now because I've experienced it.
Yeah.
I experienced something that I was once oblivious to. I didn't even know that was a reality for anyone, certainly not within my family. And so now I'm able to empathize. And I think that really is the power of us first acknowledging our pain, examining it, giving ourselves permission to heal from that pain so that we can move forward, even if it's simply to be present in the life of somebody else. Like the Bible talks about, mourn with those who mourn, comfort those who are in need of comforting. You're able to develop that level of sensitivity and empathy when you are able to move beyond seeing stuff as happening to you to, this happened to me to propel me on purpose, perhaps to make a difference in the life of somebody else.
Well, and it puts you in a unique position having experienced it, because oftentimes you can't explain it.
Right.
Exactly.
So until you feel it and until you go through it, it's hard to make somebody understand that.
Right.
Even somebody that loves you and wants to help you, that just doesn't get it. And that's where the loneliness can start to come in, because you feel like you're not going to get it. You're not going to understand me, so I'm just going to retreat. I've been told over and over how strong I am. You're doing so good. Like, I don't want to come out and be honest about my mental health and look like a failure, because you've given me this reputation of being so strong and you've got this, and, you know. So, but being in your position, going through it yourself, you get me on a different level that somebody else might not.
Absolutely. And perhaps open up the door to a conversation so that they can have an aha moment, that they can get it. And then in turn do that for somebody else. And Desiree, you do that for a living.
Yeah. Well, one of the points I wanted to make is making sure that our listeners understand that secondary trauma is when it can happen to almost anyone. So nurses, if you're working around it, if you're a teacher, if you're a hospice worker, if you're a foster parent, I was a foster parent for many years and didn't realize hearing the kids' stories were affecting me. You know, knowing what some of the kids were going through was actually affecting me. If you're anyway a mental health or counselor, if you work as a prison guard, if you work, because you see it, you're experiencing on a high alert all the time.
Right.
So anytime police officers, firemen, you know, so I just want to name some people that are constantly in a world where you can be hypervigilant when you're caring for an older person. You know, and so all these type of that's we're all caregivers in some framework, and we can be impacted by secondary trauma.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing some comments that are coming in through Facebook Live. Angela Clack is saying that this is timely and necessary conversation. Thank you so much. April Ward, similar situation. She said, thank you, Donna Baines, for sharing your story. I know April Ward has beautiful children. But one of those children, as you described, is now present with his maker.
Yeah.
We are hearing from Kevin Brown. Of course, he's going to tune in and say that the church, the body of Christ, really is the agent that God wants to use to help people with their hurts and their pains. And then I see Jonathan saying that, you know, we just need to give ourselves permission. He said, thank you. I'm glad I can have permission to exist with my shortcomings.
Because
that's the reality. We live in a fallen world
that
the Bible promises is going to translate to us experiencing afflictions. Mm-hmm. There's a famous account. Most recently, I had to share this account. I should say I was given the privilege to share this account at a funeral where a mother was memorializing her child who died quite tragically. But what was just screaming on the inside is the passage of scripture that says, if Jesus, you would have been here, my brother would have never died. Famous account by someone who was the sibling of Lazarus, who confronted Jesus and said, if you would have been here, this would have never happened. God is present in our lives, but even a relationship with God does not make us immune from challenges, loss, pain, suffering, but we can run to him and find shelter and safety and ultimately be able to get an eternal perspective, such as the one that you shared, so that our heart doesn't have to become tainted, defiled, bitter by the experiences that we absolutely are going to go through. But the operative word in that is go through, the word through, allowing pain to propel us. So let's talk a little bit about how some of those painful experiences now propel us to live life on purpose. You know, I started Think Pink at the Perfecting Church, a depression support group for caregivers battling depression, having personally experienced that. We're offering trauma healing circles through our church home with your aid. Desiree, talk about what you personally do to help people on purpose heal from and move on from painful experiences.
Well, one is I chose not to be work in an office and to work at home, walk into people's homes and in their home life that are experiencing different types of traumas. And the beauty of that is being able to walk alongside people who are hurting and then provide counseling and provide trauma healing counseling and helping them to deal with their symptoms as well as what is the traumatic events. What I often experience is complex trauma, where they have multiple traumas on top of traumas, and helping people to walk through those. Because I think that what I would like for the listeners to really pay close attention to is the fact that when we're going through trauma, it shows up. And it affects the next generation, affects our family. So if you're overwhelmed with things, when you're anxious, you're passing that anxiety on to your children.
Right.
When you're seeing the world in a distorted way, that distortion is then affected by everyone else who's around you. So those questions you're raising, those fears you're raising, those fears and all those things are passed on. And then your anger, your rage, or your withdrawal, or your loneliness, all those type of how we behave with trauma, then traumatizes other people.
Right.
You know, the trauma that we're experiencing in caring for others or whatever, then we traumatize others by passing on. And I really see that a lot. I work with families.
I have an example of that.
And sometimes they don't even know.
They don't even know. And I'm having to paint that for parents all the time, is what they're going through and what's happening is really impacting, because now their child doesn't want to go to school, or their child doesn't want to eat in the cafeteria. The child won't eat certain foods, and all these things are because you were then shaping that child or that family member around your own trauma, or your anger is creating.
My teenager was witnessing all of this when her little sister was sick, and going back to sometimes some of those unseen victims of the trauma, like the secondary victims, like my teenager absolutely felt isolated and afraid. And I remember when I got pregnant with my third daughter, my teenager stormed into my room and was so angry and said to my husband and I, "What were you thinking? Mm. What if this baby is sick? We're not, this other baby's not even healthy yet. Like, why would you do this?"
Wow.
And that was her fear.
Yeah.
And even now I'm recognizing that she needs help.
Yeah.
She needs help because that sometimes the traumatic experiences have a delayed response.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
For her, like, she's starting to understand it all now.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's one of my biggest pushes as Angela and Pastor Kevin know is that I like to see the church be the center of healing within communities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my drive now is working with American Baptist Society and with trauma healing, because I do it internationally and seeing how well it's working in other countries. And I'm like, why aren't we doing this in America where the church is a centerpiece of helping lay people be able to recognize trauma and help their neighbor through traumatic events. So I'm excited about what Pastor Kevin and Pastor Angela are doing, because I think this has to be something that's the DNA of churches.
Absolutely.
Because as I quote one of the missionaries said, the missions today is the primary focus needs to be trauma, and that's around the world because we have more refugees and more people hurting more than ever because of the different wars and things that are happening.
Right. And there's now a platform that is giving, I think, more attention to the pain, to the cries of the world. I'm thinking about, you know, this video that I just have been just so compelled by. This is America by Childish Gambino. I've just been watching it. And if that's not a cry out, number one, it's a defining point in a nation where everybody is just crying out in one form of another, where they are expressing rage, anger, you know, if it's in a form of a protest or if it's suicide, if it's marijuana usage, all of these various forms, their cries, their expressions of pain, but not only an expression of pain. We desire change. We want to move beyond this pain, and we want to make a difference. How can we make a difference? And if that is not the role of the church,
absolutely,
I don't see who else, what other organization, what individual could take personal responsibility for that?
Yeah.
That absolutely should be the church's
I'm so glad
function.
I met you.
Yeah, but it should not just exist with the church. The church should be doing exactly what you're doing, be agents of transformation, getting healed themselves, training other people, right, in that process of healing so that we could mobilize individually and make a difference and
walk alongside of people who are going through the journey. Through the journey and giving hope and praying and walking, because that's what, you know, like you said, instead they're isolating and pulling themselves, saying, "Okay, I got a mental illness, let me pull it away."
Right.
Or they don't recognize they have it, but they know that they're raging and anger and all these things are happening.
Because you feel judged, because you fear that if you are vulnerable and you expose what you're going through, that it will be interpreted as a lack of faith.
Right.
And that the answer and the solution is just to increase your faith.
Right. But what I think we're experiencing, what we're witnessing on the ground, like your daughter, it's coming out. It's coming out, and they don't want to mask. They don't want to hide. Mm-hmm. They don't want to pretend that it's not something that's happening. They need a forum, though.
Yes.
They need an outlet. They need a healthy place, not just to vent, not to just express that pain, but like you just said, people to come alongside them and help them to voice that pain, but also overcome it and perhaps use it.
And social media is not that place.
No.
It's not.
Sometimes
so
you think it is.
That could be a whole separate topic.
Yeah.
That's a whole other topic.
Right. Yeah, but clearly it's being used as a vehicle because there is not a vehicle for them, a healthy forum for them to do that, the church, namely. And so we definitely want to make sure that we have that forum available to foster healing, not just for ourselves, but for the next generation that are crying out. And so tell us a little bit about how we can learn more about HLH.
Okay.
And support you in your effort, Phoenix Rising.
So I have been documenting our journey through videos and on YouTube as well as in journals. So I'm working on a book for caregivers and
awesome.
How to care for those that aren't verbal and don't know how to speak for themselves. But also every year we participate in a 5K in New York City called the 5K to Fight Histio. It's a fundraiser that benefits Liam's Lighthouse Foundation. Michelle founded this, the lady named Michelle in Colorado founded this foundation when she lost her son Liam to HLH. It's a rare disease. It stands for hemophagocytic lymphohistiocytosis. My husband still can't say it. But would you know that the World Association for HLH is located in Pittman, New Jersey, right down the street, where they do research and fundraising? So anyway, we get involved in that effort. So if you look hashtag Phoenix Rising HLH, you'll be able to find a lot of our journey and how you can get involved, how you can join our team, donate, and help raise awareness and treatment options with rare diseases. They don't get the funding that some of these other cancers do. And childhood cancer in general doesn't. They only get 4% of most funding. So if you would like to get involved, yeah, please feel free. Look us up.
And how can we get involved with the work of Healing Trauma Institute, Desiree?
Well, one is you can contact, go through my website, which is questmovement.org, and we would love any donation support, which we are helping to mobilize people to be able to be facilitators and healers within the local communities. So we would love any support. Also, Trauma Healing Institute, which is a part of American Bible Society, which is doing healing across the world, literally a world movement. And so to help churches build that relationship, bring Christ as a center of healing around the world. So please hit me up on the website.
Yeah, please do. Desiree, you've been a phenomenal resource to the Perfecting Church. I'm grateful to call you sister, friend, but really, really grateful for the work that you've been doing through the Trauma Healing Institute. And so if you also are out there listening and want to get connected to what we call Healing Heart Circles, we offer them for men and for women. We're hopeful to do more, not just within the Perfecting Church, those that gather with us as members. Our desire is to utilize it in service of the community. And
absolutely.
So you can visit theperfectingchurch.org or call 856-817-6223, and we will mobilize and implement a circle near you to help you, or you can connect with us if you want to get connected to one of those circles, including upcoming training that we're planning in the fall so that we can get more and more people trained and facilitated and becoming facilitators. This is such yes. I'm excited to have you, Don. And I just think that that's such a great way for us to wrap up, that so often we feel like we have to overcome our pain before we can begin the journey of helping other people. And I don't know about you, but I've experienced overcoming my pain by beginning helping other people. So many aha moments, so many light bulb moments, so many, oh my gosh, that's what I'm experiencing. And the answer came out of me for someone else, but I realized that it was the answer. It was the answer for me as well. And so we don't have to wait until we are totally healed before we start walking out. Thank you for everyone who tuned in to another edition of Michelle Speaks Radio. Thank you so much, Michelle, for having me back as your guest host. And those of you who joined online, we are going to send one of you special guests a book, a copy called Resilience, so that you can recover from trauma and move on. And hear details about Presence, a retreat that we have planned in October, where one of you actually is going to win an incredible opportunity to retreat with us for the peace that you need to be present and overcome and move forward so that you can make a difference in the lives of other people. Stay tuned for news about the next edition of Michelle Speaks, and hopefully we'll all together make a difference moving into a life of wellness while helping others along the way. I said, Michelle Speaks, yeah, yeah.